You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Wu, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. The regular season is a week away now, which is quite exciting, and there's still plenty to go through. The Warriors have two more preseason games, still have to figure out what's going on with the 15th roster spot. But the first thing I wanted to get into is something that will not necessarily seem intuitive at this point, but actually when I started digging into it, got really interesting, and that is the idea of the Warriors' playoff minute distribution. So I got a question on Twitter over the weekend. I do not remember who. I apologize for that. Somebody asking me about, you know, the playoff rotation. And at first, I kind of dismissed it as being something, oh, we'll talk about that later, and there'll be plenty of time for that. And there certainly is. But in kind of just tickling my fancy and just kind of going after it a little bit, I settled on something that was really fascinating with this team. And it gets into the idea of what is really up for negotiation right now, what is being settled for this year. And where I started was I wanted to try to figure out where the minutes would go and you start at the top, as always. You start at the top and work your way down. So there are 240 minutes in a regulation NBA game, so that's 48 minutes times five positions. So you have that 240 to work with. And, you know, in the regular season, in competitive games, most teams run an 8, 9, or 10-man rotation. But in the playoffs, you can narrow it down. But the more important part than the number of guys in the rotation is how you can shift the minutes with everybody else. And since the Warriors are a top-heavy team, and that isn't necessarily meant as a criticism because they have so much talent, that at the top end, that you can be a top-heavy team if your top guys are four all-NBA players. And so I wanted to start there. So the challenge for the Warriors was that I didn't really want to work with last year's playoffs because they were an aberration in so many ways due to Stephen Curry's injury. So for the Warriors guys, I went back to 2014-15, the title year, when they stayed relatively healthy. And one thing to note when I'm going through average minutes is that the Warriors did play three overtime games in that playoffs, two in the finals and one against the Pelicans, game three of that series. So those do boost them a little bit, but not a whole heck of a lot when you think about the totality of the playoffs. I think they played 21 games that year. So it's not that big a deal. But we'll start at the top, and the top is still Stephen Curry. Curry, last year, averaged 34, a little over 34 minutes a game, but averaged 39 in the 2015 playoffs. So that's a reasonable barometer of where he would be. And I'm going to leave Durant aside for a second because I'll explain the rationale on him. So that's him. Draymond Green played a little under 35 minutes in the regular season last year, so just over Steph, but played 37 in that playoffs. And it is also worth noting that his could actually go up a little bit because that was the year that, if you remember, that he didn't start at center in the playoffs until a little bit later. You could see a little bit more from them, but if he's going to be doing that more, maybe the Warriors want to lower his Draymond's minute total a little bit just to handle that. So 37 worked as a reasonable barometer. So we're already at 76 with just two guys. And then the third one is their third best player last year, Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson averaged 33 minutes, so a little bit less than the other two in the regular season, and then averaged 36 in the 2015 playoffs, and that's a reasonable enough proxy. He played more than that last year, but he was shouldering a much heavier burden because Steph was out, and he scored, I think Klay scored like 35 points a game in that Blazers playoff series when Curry was limited and everything like that. So we wouldn't expect that to be the same. And as I said, Curry's injury is a big part of the reason why I went back to 2015. So 36 might actually be on the low side for Klay, but it's a reasonable proxy. So even with just those three guys, you're at 112 minutes, and 112 is pretty close to half of 240. So that's really impressive when you're thinking about it, especially when the fourth guy is another cornerstone player, recent MVP in Kevin Durant. Last season, Durant played 36 minutes a game, and unlike the Warriors, we can look at last season for Durant as a reasonable proxy as opposed to any of the other years. And last year, he averaged about 40 minutes a game in the playoffs, which was actually less than he did his prior time in the playoffs, where I think he averaged 42. So 40 is a lot of minutes. The Warriors might not want to use him that much in the playoffs if he's going to be playing some power forward and probably a lot of power forward, but that is still reasonable. It's not insane or anything like that. So if you put him at 40 minutes, then you're at 152 for just those four guys, leaving 88 left. And you not only have one starter, but you have an entire bench. And instead of working through a center, working through kind of a starting five or anything like that, the Warriors have two other holdovers who have really similar roles to prior years. And so Andre Iguodala in 2015 started some games in the finals, was the finals MVP. He ended up averaging 30 minutes a game in the playoffs. And last year he averaged 26.6 in the regular season. You could see a little bit of a step down from him from 30, but maybe not. If they really do a good job resting him, Iguodala is physically capable of doing that. So it isn't this unrealistic thing that is a possibility, but if I were to say one player who could go down, Iguodala would be the most likely to move it maybe to 26 or 27, just as he's getting a little older. That said, it puts the team at 182 minutes. So, and that the Iguodala might be a part of their starting five. They could do a version of kind of like what they've done in the playoffs the last couple of years of using a center and bringing Iguodala in early, which I am an avowed critic of because it doesn't line his minutes up with the guys that you're going to want him to cover. However, that is also different this year because one of the guys Iguodala was most needed for was Kevin Durant, and he's on the team now. So there are fewer threes that Iguodala will be essential for. LeBron is the most obvious. If they face the Spurs, Kawhi will be there. But that also could limit Iguodala's exposure, at least in the early rounds of the playoffs. And the other player we don't, of course, know if the Warriors will face them is how they would handle James Harden, because Klay struggled with Harden the last couple years most of the time. Iguodala did a better job, but maybe Durant will want the challenge of tackling his former teammate. And considering the Rockets are probably going to be playing at least one other guy who isn't a huge perimeter threat, you can justify that. And you could even put Klay then on Eric Gordon and put Steph on Trevor Ariza or something like that, because the Rockets aren't going to just start running a bunch of stuff for Trevor Ariza, because that's just not something he can take advantage of. So Iguodala's role could diminish. It could also be a circumstance where, and I would say this with a lot of these top guys, where this is their average, but they're a little lower than that in the early rounds and a little higher than that in the later rounds, which will exacerbate what is already a very interesting question. So through these guys, we're at 182 minutes as a team. That means the Warriors only have 58 minutes left, and that's five. So any bench spots, any other rotation, non-starters or, you know, light starters, depending on how you want to do it. The last guy who we have a real direct precedent on is Sean Livingston. Livingston averages about 20 minutes a game in the regular season. He's been in that line during his 2 years at the Warriors. And 2 years ago, again, we need to go back there with him because Curry's health was such a big factor last year. Livingston averaged 18 minutes a game in the playoffs. So he's the only player of this group whose role actually diminished a little bit. And that makes sense because when Curry's minutes go up, your need for Sean Livingston goes down. So Livingston at 18, reasonable proxy, possible that some of the other guards take minutes away from him, but certainly not definite. So if you add his 18 to the prior list, you get exactly 200. 200 minutes out of 240. So that leaves only 40 minutes left. And that 40 minutes is really the idea that I wanted to hammer home in this podcast, is that all of the concerns, all of the possibilities with this team outside of the Fantastic Four or whatever you want to call them really boils down to about 40 minutes, 40 playoff minutes. So they are high leverage, and you can't discount 40 minutes because it is still 1/6 of the game. But remember how many guys are still left unaccounted for entirely. Zaza Pachulia, likely starting center. David West, important rotation player. Ian Clark, Patrick McCaw, Kevon Looney, and then possibly one of the other big men, Varejão, McAdoo, Damian Jones, depending on how all that works out. So you have 40 minutes per game to split among those at least five guys and, you know, whoever else fits in. And also, if the Warriors got any sort of a buyout candidate, would go with that person. And so there is consternation in terms of the regular season, figuring out the center rotation, figuring out everything else. And that consternation is legitimate because the regular season is determined on a wider variety of factors. But those issues really only serve for a team that is defining success entirely and justifiably by the championship. It all really boils down to that 40 minutes. And in a really fun coincidence, last year, because both Zaza Pachulia Pachulia and David West played in the playoffs. Pachulia started for the Mavericks and West came off the bench for the Spurs. They combined for exactly 40 minutes a game in the playoffs. And both of them took either steps down or were neutral in terms of the minutes they played relative to the regular season. So there is a direct precedent. Pachulia went from 26 to 22, West stayed at 18 for doing that. And so that combination of getting those 40 minutes is exceedingly unlikely for a million different reasons, part of it being that there are other players who are capable of doing it. But that also indicates that you're looking at guys who will be in smaller roles, and generally smaller roles can lead to higher energy, higher efficiency sometimes, and definitely they can be more aggressive. And another part of that, when you're dealing with big men potentially playing fewer minutes, is that foul trouble is a much smaller issue, because not only do the Warriors have a large number of individuals who can play center, basically the entire rest of their bench, they also can play more aggressively because they can cycle through these guys, they can play the hot hand, they can do a lot of different things with that group. And so one of the big questions for Kerr throughout the season, the regular season and the playoffs, is going to be how much he wants to use Draymond Green at center. And when you go through that list, the first 200 minutes, none of those players are natural centers. So arguably the biggest remaining question with that 40 is how much of that do you want to give to center? And some of that will be when Draymond is off the floor. So the estimate is that he's at 37. So bare minimum, you want to do 11. You know, you want to give those 11. But realistically, something in the 20 to 24 minute range seems right. So then if you do that, then Draymond plays about 15 minutes at the four. So enough to really get some rest, maybe not, but to take a little bit lighter responsibility on that end. However, if it's really working and the Warriors can handle it, playing all of those guys instead of basically killing the stagger and running the four best players together more of the time could be absolutely devastating, just because very few other teams have a counter for it. So they should be open to that and going to something like, for those of you who listen to it, I talked about a rotation versus replacement system. I'm going to write about this for The Athletic, maybe even as late as March or April. But one of the most daring approaches, if they feel comfortable with McCaw and Clark, would be to do line changes just in the playoffs for short rests. And that could be the best way to actually keep this team dominating everybody else, if that main group is as good as many of us expect it to be. So the other reason why I wanted to kind of get into this now is because it does put the Clark-McCaw position battle, as it were, into greater perspective, that it is a concern and it is a part of the rest of the arc of the team and the arc of McCaw's career and everything like that. But it isn't the biggest deal in the world if both of them disappoint. You already have great minutes from perimeter players throughout that. But at the same time, if they can step into some of the Sean Livingston role, that is really significant for this team, and they can make the Warriors more resilient in terms of injuries and or foul trouble, because if Klay Thompson gets into foul trouble, which has happened in the playoffs at points, Ian Clark can step into that role, McCaw can do a bunch of different things as well. I talked about that a little bit yesterday, and as one of the takeaways in the Lakers game is that Clark may be better as a step in for Klay Thompson, and McCaw taking on a larger role in that second unit. And again, going to the idea of a bench mob playoff second unit, McCaw can take a larger role because then you're going to have fewer creators if you're keeping Durant and Curry together. So that is one different theory of it. And that also explains why the Warriors can be really patient with Kevon Looney and Damian Jones. They are, in a way, their found money for this year in terms of the playoffs, because there isn't that much of a need. Pachulia and West, and theoretically if they wanted the other bigs, can handle whatever of that 40 remaining minutes Coach Kerr wants to give them. That is not an issue at all. We might worry a little bit about Pachulia as a help defender. David West arguably has greater issues on that front, though his offense will mesh very well with this team. And so that really does tie in, though, because if you don't need anything from them when it comes to the playoffs, then you can handle it a little bit differently. It's great to get them reps during the season, but there is no sense of urgency with it. And it is insane to not have a sense of urgency for a team that is aiming this high. You know, usually when a team is going for a championship and you're thinking about not just like the seventh or eighth guys on their bench, but even when you get to 9 and 10, those players are going to need to produce because at certain moments they're going to get called on. And injuries can make that completely true for the Warriors. They can change that risk calculus entirely. And the other part that is notable about that 40 minutes when you're thinking about more of the fringy bigs is you could think about it as an argument for JaVale McGee if you wanted to, because of his higher ceiling than guys like Varejao and McAdoo, because while those 40 minutes are small in number, they are pretty significantly important when it's a team that's gunning for a championship. And if you only need 20 minutes or so, you might as well aim for the stars with somebody like McGee than somebody who's a little bit lower in terms of ceiling, or a lot lower in Varejao's case, but lower in terms of McAdoo. And while it doesn't have to be a choice between McGee over one or both of those two, it is, in a functional matter, just a lot to commit to big men, especially when the Warriors will need guys to play in garbage time. So they will have to figure all of that out. It is a lot to handle, a lot to take in. But the idea of this, all the bench, all the concerns about of other people really boiling down to 40 minutes a game split among five or so guys possible in the playoffs really does put light into what a kind of small problem that is, and also how remarkable this team is. Because yeah, there are a lot of teams that will probably have, you know, 40 or so minutes that are question marks, but the biggest difference is that the first 200 aren't being filled with almost all NBA players. You know, literally the first 150 minutes are all NBA players, you know, all stars, whatever, however you want to define really, really good basketball players. So that is a major benefit that the Warriors have that nobody else does. Cleveland probably comes the closest, Spurs, depending on how their guards age, but they're going to have a lot of bites at the apple, but they need at least one or two of those guys to work out. And Clark, McCaw, you know, if either of them can gobble up 10, 15 of those minutes, or if they can combine get 20, the Warriors are in a really, really, really good place. And the other guy to watch, I mentioned him briefly, but Kevon Looney taking something like 5 to 10 of those minutes would be a great thing, because then he can step into a larger role as some of these guys, depending on free agency and everything else, like Iguodala and Livingston, step down, and then you're not forcing as much work on Draymond because Looney can handle some of that. So if he can take that part of the role, and ideally for the Warriors, if Damian Jones can take any of it, they're going to be in an even better place as we look 2 to 3 years from now, assuming the structure stays relatively the same. Before getting into a little bit of Warriors news, want to take a quick break to give you a word from a sponsor. The piece of news, if you want to call it that, that came out of today was that during a press availability, which I unfortunately was not at, Steve Kerr got asked about JaVale McGee making the team, and Anthony Slater is the one who tweeted out, he's one, but though other people mentioned this, he said, and I quote, "I think JaVale McGee's got a good chance," end quote, "of getting the Warriors' 15th roster spot." That isn't the biggest thing in the world, but is a nice positive statement just in terms of what he could be for the team, and because having him on the team is in some ways a commitment in another way, because they don't have a lot of guards. And while can't read anything into that, if necessarily like, oh, if he makes the team, then McAdoo or Varejao could be gone, even though he has outplayed them this season, you can't really read that into this, at least at this juncture, but it is still a sign that the Warriors are looking at keeping their best guys. Another huge benefit, I've talked about this a little bit before, Bobby Marks is the one who brought this to my attention, though it was information that I had before, was that Elliot Williams has a partially guaranteed contract, the heaviest partial guarantee of any of the guys, but his contract fully guarantees right before the start of the regular season. So that is done to, the reason agents negotiate that with teams is so that their players can get a clean resolution. And the trade-off there, which might end up costing Elliot Williams a spot on the Warriors, is that teams have to decide really early, because if they don't, then it's a big financial commitment. So the Warriors will have to see how all of that is going and make an earlier decision. So JaVale gives them more flexibility because his contract doesn't guarantee, from what I can tell, it doesn't at least fully guarantee until mid-January. And mid-January is when whoever's still left on your roster, you know, on a rest of the season contract, gets fully guaranteed. So there's kind of a drop dead date for that. You can still do things like 10-day contracts, but they fully guarantee. So JaVale gives the Warriors time to figure out if they want to do something else with the spot, or maybe if he's really impressive, then maybe they consider cutting Varejao, encouraging him to go into retirement, or any of my other wishful thinking, considering how big a dis- not not disappointment, how just ineffective he was for long stretches during the season last year once he came over. He did have some good times, and people like to remind me of that because he did have some positive stretches for the Warriors, but they weren't consistent enough to necessarily justify a spot on the team. So you don't want to read too much into it, first of all, because it is in no way, shape, or form binding, but also because it is in no way, shape, or form permanent, but certainly a positive sign in terms of maximizing what this team can be given the current options. A guard or even a forward, maybe more of a three than a four, fits a need in terms of garbage time, fits a need in terms of the overall structure of the team, but they don't really have any of those other guys on roster. And the other spot that I consider to be a position of need is it would be great to have another true point guard on the team just in case they have to cycle everybody up due to an injury to Curry or Livingston. But Pressey hasn't really stood out as a guy like saying, you have to make sure that you have him on your team. He'll probably end up in Santa Cruz, and that's fine. And then maybe you can just move him up for a short period of time, like a 10-day or a couple 10-days, if you need to do that. But he has not proven it, like, you can't let him go. Because once somebody's in the D-League, and this is good to know, once somebody's in the D-League, anybody can sign them. And they aren't bound to it, so it's not like a team can sign them without consent. So let's say Utah is like, oh, we want Pressey, we're going to sign Pressey. No, he has to commit to that. And so there are certain teams, I'm assuming, though they couldn't really codify this, that part of the reason they give a heavy partial guarantee and then cut them is that, hey, this money is paying for their loyalty, in effect, because they make a lot of money at that point that then, you know, goes into their overall salary, but because the D-League has these lower minimums in terms of how much they can get paid. So they might do that kind of a situation with Pressey. Other teams have more prominent examples of that with guys that have significant guarantees, but we really will see, and the Warriors will be players in terms of whoever comes available. I had this crazy, you could call it a pipe dream idea, that the Celtics are going to have to cut somebody who has a guaranteed contract, that there would be a way theoretically for the Warriors to do that if, let's say, that player was RJ Hunter, who I wanted the Warriors to draft back in 2015, but they just he went before them because the Celtics had a couple picks before the Warriors, and that would be theoretically possible. However, the Warriors are very low in terms of assets because they have the first round picks, they owe the Jazz, they have a series of second round picks that they owe for various things, so they don't really have sweeteners. And if they were cutting somebody as good as RJ, who has played well enough in the last couple days that it looks like he will stick around, and it might be James Young that gets cut, so that's a little bit less appetizing for the Warriors because he still is a little bit of a high ceiling guy, but his floor is low enough that it might not be worth it for a team like the Warriors. Also, he has a shorter amount of time under team control because he was drafted earlier, so I don't think the Warriors will be as gung-ho about somebody like James Young, but you never know who's going to really hit the market, and there could be some surprises just depending on who impresses, but as of now, it doesn't look like there are going to be any, and the Warriors then have an opportunity with their D-League team and scouting and everything like that. And what makes Golden State different than so many other teams is that they can direct a lot of their energy in terms of looking for that person, because they won't, in all likelihood, be trading any of their key contributors, not only because their best guys aren't really on the trade market, but because so many of their other players are on one-year deals. And you don't do that for optic reasons. You know, the Warriors aren't going to trade David West unless David West says he wants to be traded. So they deal with that part of it. So they can focus a lot of their scouting and all of that energy on trying to find the best 15th guy for this team, and JaVale McGee gives them more time to figure that out because he's not guaranteed. So nothing is definite, nothing is locked in, but it is still a very encouraging sign all the same. So this was a solo episode. I was going to have a guest on, but you know, these things can change around, and with only a week left until the regular season, I'm going to try to have some more big picture stuff, because once we get into the season and we have lots of games to talk about, even though there will be time to do some big picture stuff, that will change the way we talk about this team and change expectations. So I'm working on having a couple of guests that have not yet been on Locked On Warriors, but people I know. So those of you who are familiar with my work can have a good idea of who that might be. But we're working on logistics and timing and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see, but it should be a really fun stretch. The other thing I wanted to do on this episode, I could have done it last night, but forgot to, is I really wanted to do a sincere thank you, because this launched 5 weeks ago today. I'm recording this on Monday, and in those 5 weeks, we got 100,000 listens, and that is a great number. I don't try to focus too much on those kind of metrics because they are, to a degree, outside of my control. But 100,000 is a wonderful number at this point, especially starting with, you know, not a lot of fanfare other than my Twitter account and the great work that David Locke and the Locked On Podcast Network does, but no backing from any, like, media conglomerates or anything like that. And the feedback I've gotten has been wonderful, and this is not my bread and butter. We're getting closer to that. So if you've been enjoying this, we're getting closer to it, and it's going to be a lot of fun to really break down some of these games once we get into some real substantive basketball. If you have any feedback, you can reach out to me, Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. And then you can also follow the show, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook. You can also reach out to LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com for feedback. Or one thing that's different with this show than the two other podcasts I do is that we can do local advertising. So if you are a local company, I actually have a little bit of geographic information on our listenership. So if you are interested in that sort of thing, let me know. I'm always interested in those kinds of opportunities, and it'll be fun to see how that works with somebody with something that's very different. And as somebody who is interested in the business of podcasting, the idea of local versus national versus international is something that is legitimately interesting to me. So if that is something that intrigues you, let me know. You know how to reach out to me at that point. If you support the show, you should please download every episode, subscribe using whatever you use, and then if you have the chance, please leave a rating and a review. It really does make a difference, especially in these early days, because that is how people connect with the show. They see something, and, you know, hey, it's the Warriors. We were lucky enough to be in the top 100 on iTunes, I think it was last week, and so when somebody looks at that sort of thing and there are a series of positive reviews, then maybe they'll give it a chance. And once they get in, it's my job to make sure that it's worth it, but in order to get people in, that requires me and everybody else, because that's really the only way to do it. And I'm lucky enough to have had direct experience with this with Dunked On, so I know how positive word of mouth can really help get something going. So thank you so much to everybody for listening. Take care and make it a great day.